The Bill Myers Show podcast is sponsored by Clouser Drilling. They've been leading the way in Southern Oregon well drilling for over 50 years. Find out more about them at clouserdrilling.com.
Wilkinson Realty.
Hey, 4 minutes after 8, Dr. Dennis Powers will be joining me here in a few minutes for Where Past Meets Present. That'll be after Town Hall News and a Kim Komando digital update. Patrick writes me this morning, the email bill@billmyershow.com. Bill, why do they call it gender affirming? Shouldn't it be referred to as gender reassignment? If it was really gender-affirming, wouldn't that imply that the patient in question would be influenced to remain the gender they currently are? Now, well, gender-affirming, I think, means affirming the mental illness within, Patrick. I think that is what it is, and Oregon is all in on affirming mental illness. In other words, whatever you imagine, I imagine that next there will be species-affirming, and so this way, if, like when you're 3- or 4-year-old son or daughter says, I want to be a dinosaur. And then we'll have to start grafting on little, you know, stegosaurus things on the forehead and, you know, that kind of thing. Oregon is able to take affirming care to its logical conclusion. All right. So there you go. Appreciate the email, bill@billmyershow.com. Rest of the news, we'll do that now, huh?
News this hour from townhall.com. I'm Rich Thomason. A federal judge in New Hampshire has blocked President Trump's executive order ending birthright citizenship.
Chances late Wednesday, early Thursday.
9 minutes after 8, Dr. Dennis Powers will join me after the Kim Komando digital update, which is always some great digital information this morning. See, checking the price of gold. Yikes. Okay. Let's see. I want to say early part of the year, we were at about, late 2024. We were into as low as $25.45, and today it's $2,907.48. Yeah, it's talking about tumult and central banks not being able to get control of the Western welfare states in the budgets. Yeah, and so people who have been investing into physical gold and silver seem to be getting rewarded with that at the moment, or from that at the moment, and it's it's more than an inflation hedge. In fact, I think it has to do more, though, with the just in case. And they want to come after it all. Hopefully, President Trump doesn't come after our wealth. But, you know, the federal government is looking at ways to get various bits of change underneath the couch cushion, which could maybe be your 401k at some point. Talk to the folks over at J. Austin & Company, Gold and Silver Buyers in Ashland, 1632 Ashland Street in Ashland, 6th and G in downtown Grants Pass. Do you have to wait until gold hits 3,000 to think that maybe this is something worth putting some into? No, you don't have to. You can go in there today. Talk to Mark and Andrea. Maybe you want to liquidate when you see these kind of prices. You're going, hey, man, I'm getting out while the getting's good. Either way, talk to the recognized experts to do this. Jay Austin in Ashland and Grants Pass and online, fortunereserve.com.
This hour of the Bill Myers Show is sponsored by Fontana Roofing. For roofing, gutters, and sheet metal services, visit FontanaRoofingServices.com.
Winter weather is here, and your roof is your first line of defense. At Pressure
on 1059 K290 AF Rogue River in South Jackson County on 1067 K294 AS Ashland.
Cranking into Where Past Meets Present, Dr. Dennis Powers, retired professor of business law and, of course, local historian and so much more. Overall, good guy. Oh, by the way, author. Find out more at DennisPowersBooks.com. Dennis, welcome back.
Hey. Yeah. Hey, amigo.
Hey, amigo.
On a cold winter's night.
I know, amigo. We're going to have to get into the all sorts of stuff about the various judges that are telling Trump, you can't do that. No, you can't do that. No, the courts control what the executive can do. So anyway, we'll talk about that here in a little bit, all right? Right now, let's talk about the, well, of course, some people are saying that President Trump is acting like a big old, you know, Neanderthal caveman going in there and just breaking stuff left and right. Let's talk about the progenitor of that, the Grants Pass cavemen. Grants Pass cavemen, where do we go on the history of that today on Where Past Meets Present?
Well, Bill, it's a wonderful story. As a matter of fact, last week when we were profiling Deb Potts for Josephine County mayor and all those years that he was watching over Josephine County in terms of Salem. But Deb Potts was the chief bighorn for the Grants Pass cavemen back in the mid-1950s. So, Bill, what hit me was the fact that, you know, now this is when we had leaders that weren't woke, so woke, that they'd be the first ones to try to tear down, you know, statues, including the cavemen. But it dates back to about 100 years ago to the development of the Oregon Caves.
Yeah, 1922 is when that was completed, right, on 199.
Right on. Absolutely right. And they had an agreement that came between actually Grants Pass businessmen who financed the lodgings and the guide services to run the resort when the Forest Service then provided oversight and infrastructure such as cave lighting and trails and a water system. But that summer, a few Chamber of Commerce members showed up. I would have just loved to have been there at a luncheon meeting wearing animal skins and long, straggly wigs.
And that was where it started, right? Just for people just having fun on a lark?
That's right. That's how it started. It was for fun. But also the chamber then said, you know, this might not be a bad symbol to use in terms of Oregon Caves, because we have, people that are coming right through Grants Pass and they go down into what's Cave Junction. And we have a vested interest there. But in long story short was the fact that started off the story. So they'd wear their furs and their burly clubs, wielding them and scowling as Neanderthals. And they were accompanying, and I remember talking some folks some time ago about the cave queen and princesses, about a cave queen. And the cavemen performed very uncivilized acts, such as capturing female crowd members and then putting them into a rustic cage towed by a pickup truck. And then, Bill, that they would then go ahead and give them polished stones. It was all really a stage stunt, and people knew it. And where it really hit its apex was when Dewey was running against Truman. This is back in 1948. The bus carrying Dewey arrived downtown in Grants Pass, but my friend, with numerous cavemen who then arranged for the governor's release after the pre-arranged hijacking. And so we go on to where, and by the time it was national news. One of the ones that I thought was really kind of cute was that they went ahead and they bid on constructing the San Francisco-Oakland Bay Bridge for about 24 million deer hides. And you see, this is when it was looked upon as fun.
Yeah, there was a lot of fun here. Well, you know, I think my favorite part of the whole story, though, was that the old Soviet Union newspaper Pravda ran a story of Dewey when he was kidnapped by the cavemen, right? But what Pravda wrote was that this was a protest against the Wall Street money gogs.
And, you know, okay. It's been a while since I've seen that term about money gogs. So in any event, it got to a point to where in one survey, the Oregon Grants Pass cavemen was known by name by one out of every 10 people in the entire United States. Then also when we drive into Cave Junction, actually Grants Pass, on our way to Cave Junction, there's the 18-foot fiberglass caveman statue that is in front of the Chamber of Commerce. And you have cavemen being not only the mascot of the high school, but there's lots of businesses that use it in the name. And it really appeals to me because it's not only part of our history, but then it was where people could have a little bit of fun before we run into this radical wokeness where what everyone does or what everyone wants to say has to be screened by the far-left radicals.
Do they do the cavemen still go out and do anything like that, or is it a little more subdued these days, the version?
I'm waiting. That's an excellent point because they do meet now and then for lunch. I mean, who knows? Maybe after our talking about them, they'll have that. But they're not having the meetings they had before. More than likely, with the way that the Biden-Obama crowd has changed everything, if they They'd probably be arrested if they went out in their pickup truck.
Well, you know, there is a certain, I don't know if it's the safety cult or whatever it is, but if someone's having a good time, we have to stop that in Oregon. There seems to be a little bit of that that goes on now and then, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, plus the fact that even comedians have been saying that with Trump's election, they can be a little freer in terms of having jokes. I mean, this was just an entire assault on the First Amendment, the 14th Amendment, by actually the money gogs, who in this case, my friend, were really Soros's and Kamala, and the oligarchs were still in Nicaragua, as we've seen in terms of the fight that's going on with trying to find out, you know, where money has been going. But, you know, the cavemen, my hat's off to Grants Pass and to Jackson and Josephine County.
It's 8:21, talking with Dennis Powers, of course, where past meets present. Let me grab a line here. I don't know if this is someone from the Grants Pass area or not, but hi, good morning. Who's this?
Hey, Bill, it's your friend Brad. Dr. Powers, good morning to you. Always enjoy your segments.
Yes.
Good morning.
So I wanted to rewind a couple weeks when you're talking about Art Dubes. You know, you talked about his film work. You talked about his wildlife advocacy. The one thing that you missed was that he was a developer.
You're absolutely right, because that, you know, a Dubs house was one that he designed himself. And also the key thing there, as you're pointing out so well, is that he developed a number of them. And that's where a good bit of his money came in, that allowed him to do the things he did. Plus, what really I was happy we could center on that most people miss is that the foundation that Dubs set up is in the top five of all foundations here in Southern Oregon, with assets of approximately $21 million. And he put $250,000 into the hospital for the cancer center that he's on top of. But it's
But our bottom line, though, is that it all started from the development. Is that kind of what you were getting at?
Yeah, it was. Yeah. It actually was. I thought we'd profiled it, but in any event, I'm happy to go into it now.
All right.
Yeah, but anyway, great. But I've got a question for you. So this is your specialty. There's a lot of discussion, Bill was talking about this morning, about how the judges are trying to overrule executive action. So here, if that turns out to stand, here's my question. If the argument on the left that stands is that, okay, only the elected person can actually exercise the executive power, what does that mean here in Oregon when we have a governor that issues executive orders like candy, you know, creating things like CFEC, creating things like new rules for OSHA, creating things, all these new things.
Yeah, climate-friendly, equitable communities and more, yeah.
Yeah, if the president of the United States can't do it, then how can the governor of a state do it? That's my question.
Well, Bill, we can go into that now if you'd like.
Okay, well, why don't we, I'll tell you what, Brad.
You want to put it off until after the commercial.
Yeah, let me take a break, and then we'll address that. How about that, Brad? Okay. Appreciate the call.
Sounds good.
All right. We'll do that more I guess, Dennis, what we're going to do here is take it to the present next. Okay? Hang on.
Oh, yeah. And what's really great, Bill, is that that's where he wanted to go, and we'll just go there like a sled.
All right. 8:24.
Two Dogs Fabricating carries North Star flatbeds and trailers, along with a full line of Horizon. And
this is the Bill Myers Show.
8:26. Hey, Doc, before we shift into the present, we have to stick with the caveman for just one moment, if that's okay with you.
Sure.
All right.
It's a fun subject.
All right. Hey, Gary, your father, or was it your grandfather, was in one of the early versions of the caveman? What's the story?
My dad was a local dentist, and he was a kick-in-the-butt kind of guy. One day he went over to his dental assistant's house dressed as a caveman.
Uh-huh.
He peeled his own dentures out of these awful teeth, and he had a toilet bobber as a club.
Okay.
You know, the float mechanism.
Yeah.
Anyway, he knocked on the door and he jumped up and down and kind of scared the heck out of his dental assistant. But he dressed up that way, and it was so funny that he would do something like that.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, thanks for sharing that. Okay, Gary, it's that kind of caught fire here for a while, Dr. Powers. You know, the whole caveman mm-hmm. movement here.
Appreciate you betcha.
Yeah, appreciate the call. Why don't we take it back to the present here? I just want to make sure we got Gary's little story there. So his father no longer with us, unfortunately, is what he was telling me.
Yeah.
All right. What about executive power like Brad was talking about, though? We have the executive power, which is being attacked at every angle in the court system in the United States government. And here, executive power seems to get absolutely no question whatsoever from the courts. What I guess someone would have to challenge it, too, for that matter.
Yeah, that's very true. For starters, why is the far left melting down over USA aid and what Musk is doing in terms of Hakeem Jeffries, Gavin Newsom, Biden, Kerry Pelosi?
Well, it's pretty easy to understand that a lot of their friends end up getting paid in that kind of a situation.
It's the kickbacks. Mm-hmm. The kickbacks. It's the fact that they know that for, let's say, $50 million to go for condoms in Guatemala, is that those payments that go in had to go through an LGBTQ agency that would go ahead and funnel it back into who knows, AOC or whomever. But they would funnel it back, as a campaign contribution. So the whole thing is not only fraudulent, we are still in Nicaragua. And then we go into the forum shopping that's happening as to the responsibility and the power of the executive agency, the executive powers, where, you have judicial, executive, legislative. And in any event, what we're seeing is an old Nicaraguan type of tactic, which is bury the message, which is the fraud underneath Biden Obama, and do that by targeting as Nazis and come up with an argument that they can run past in New York City, being this Edgemayor, who was an Obama appointee, and if you look at his record, has never voted away from what Obama would have liked, and he was the one that first came in and put on the temporary injunction that had to do with Dodge being able to go ahead and look at the Treasury. But in terms of that ruling, and then we can go into it's going to be going up, and all that the administration is trying to do is to get information, but this injunction is saying you cannot even use the injunction. So this is a hell of a power play by people we thought that the vast majority of the United States had said, we're tired.
And I would agree that many people, I think, are in support of President Trump's agenda here to root out the fraud, waste, and abuse. Here is the challenge that I'm running into, though, is, could the same tactics be used in the state of Oregon? Because we have essentially a government that's being run by executive order. And now there have to be some limits to executive power, otherwise there'd be no reason to have Congress. And where I get concerned here, even though I like what that Doge's been doing, I'm not convinced that it's necessarily within the executive's power to stop the money that has already been put in the slush funds by Congress. Am I right or wrong about that?
So there's a gradient of that argument.
Okay.
Because one is funding that's already been authorized, and the other one is clearly illegal funding underneath U.S. aid that is not to be the type of funding that the legislature authorized. And so what we're having now is the fourth estate that is trying their best as supported by the far left. Now, let's come back into Oregon. I mm-hmm. agree with you. The problem here in Oregon is what we've seen is what would have happened if the chameleon had won, because we have a supermajority by the far left.
In Oregon, yeah, we do.
Terrible.
Okay.
It's terrible. So people are leaving Oregon. Question is what can we do? Well, I don't think there's much that can be due unless you bring in the alliance defending freedom.
Oh, okay. So you're saying
cases.
Okay, so you're saying it's going to have to be challenged, and yet at the same time you have to be honest with yourselves. What is going after Trump is the judiciary. Judiciary is ideologically not from the right, you know, in this state. And so you would likely run into a buzzsaw challenging Governor Kotek. Is that what I'm hearing from you? Is that why? Is that the only difference? I mean, the state likes left-wing authoritarianism and dislikes right-wing authoritarianism, or not authoritarianism, or actually executive power. Is that what we're talking about? Is it that simple?
No. In my own humble opinion. What it is the fact that Oregon is a small state, and unless you go ahead and bring in these other nonprofits that will fight for freedom, I don't see what we're going to be able to do here from within our resources. Now, it's different out in the federal lands, and the other problem is if we take a look, my friend, at what Salem has come down to with its, is first of all, the wildfire areas that have come in,
mapping issue that we've been talking about, yeah.
Yeah, which is going to knock people out from being able to get insurance, and it's just saying, hey, if there's a fire, more than likely, we're going to say it's your fault for not cutting down all your trees. So it's this abuse, and how do you stop abuse in this state?
Okay, but why do you need out-of-state nonprofits to be able to do this, though, to be able to take it on?
Okay, so I need your information here. What do we have inside this state with the Republican Party or an opposition group that could do something that could challenge it positively other than bringing in larger foundations outside? What do you see could be challenging it?
All right. Well, I guess I see nothing then. That is a self-explaining answer then. Okay, gotcha. Because they're... the right wing is essentially beaten down legally in this state, is what you're telling me, right?
Well, there's just not enough of them.
Okay,
you know, unfortunately, and I see it here in Ashland and the attempts that Ashland has used to.
Okay, so I'm going to translate that.
County.
Tina Kotek gets away with abusing executive authority because the system likes what she's doing, right?
No. The system for the rest of us, and I don't know, what do you think in the last voting for what you've seen, about what percentage of people voting in the mayor, or not the mayor, let's say the governor's position in Oregon, what percentage would be Republicans, independents, and non...
Maybe 40%.
Okay.
On the high end.
What's happening is that 40% are being muzzled by the control that I saw that happened over the last 35 years here.
But I'm going to take it back to my question, though, is that essentially what you're getting at, though, is that popular support is on Tina Kotek's side, whether we like it or not down here. And that's why she can get away with, abusing executive authority.
Well, I don't think it's popular support because 40% is definitely a lot of people. Just a slight different take on this bill.
Uh-huh.
The other thing is that what has happened here was a conscious grab for power from key Democrat far left leaders that goes back, you know, that you've been seeing since you've been here for maybe 30 years.
And then you have squishy voting records or voting processes that tend to enable the holding on of power. All right. Dr. Powers here. Let me grab a quick call. I think it's Tom. Tom's in talent. Tom, you have a question for Dennis? Go ahead.
Yeah, it's a good question about how much of the U.S. aid money is going to fund climate change and all the NGOs in Oregon here that are pushing everything, including, this paper ballot elections and so forth. My take on the whole picture is that all of this is symptoms of a government with unlimited money, and the solution is to abolish the Federal Reserve System, put money issuance under the Treasury Department, and have a national sales tax and abolish the IRS in the process.
All right. I appreciate it. It's an interesting idea, Tom. Let me see what Doc says about it. Doc, I'll give you the final word on this. What say you this morning, huh?
Well, I think all of us, including your listeners, would agree that something has to be done, and how do we do it? The key thing here is separating Oregon from what Trump is doing. Same concepts, except the power bases are different. And in terms of the Federal Reserve System, there's only so much he can do. And unfortunately, my friends, is the fact that what we're seeing now with bought judges, and it's easy. When I was in private practice, I didn't have the freedom to go ahead and say, when you look at this judge's record, he was appointed by Obama or appointed by Biden, and he was a chief fundraiser. Look at his decisions, and you know within a 95% probability as to how that judge is going to rule. This is what's happening in New York. This is Nicaragua. The fight continues.
Final question I would have for you before we take off here, Doc, is do you believe that the Supreme Court, when Trump's birthright citizenship issue goes up to the Supreme Court, and it really will be, and I have a feeling it's being done to bring it before the Supreme Court. More than one person I've talked to has said that Supreme Court does respond to public opinion for the most part in order to maintain its relevancy. Otherwise, they would never overturn precedents that have been set before, all right? You can just look at the history of this. Would you see the current Supreme Court favorably look at President Trump's 14th Amendment challenge there? What do you think?
It's going to be a 5-4 decision. And the key thing is going to be whether or not our Chief Justice is going to squirrel thinking about what his legacy should be. It's a strict constitution argument based on why do we have the provision in there as to citizenship and what was the constitution going back.
Yeah, under the jurisdiction thereof, right? I mean, just because somebody shows up here does not mean necessarily under the jurisdiction thereof. I'm talking about just a common sense, you know, approach to it.
And, Bill, as we continue that line, on that, it was in to keep the fact that when you had foreign governments that came in legally here who were representing their governments in terms of the work in the United States and had a child, that child was not to get citizenship.
Yeah, that was well known. And now we have Chinese birth tourism, which is an issue here. But I'm going to take it back to the knowledge of how laws had to be passed to bring Native Americans under the jurisdiction of the United States of America, subject to the jurisdiction, even though they were born here. And that seems to be getting forgotten right now, isn't it?
Well, but you see, when we go into the original, and I'm going to answer it this way, if you go into the original intent as to the phrase that we've been talking about, it really was having to do with African Americans. It had nothing to do with Native Americans. And it was so that they, who were born here in the United States, and when slavery was defeated, that they had the right to be citizenship, to be citizens.
Mm-hmm.
And so the problem is,
But the Native American citizenship question wasn't settled until later. The 14th Amendment didn't touch them at that time,
well,
right?
But what you see, when you look at all of the court decisions, and I haven't looked at them all, but I've taken a quick look at about four of the ones that came in on this issue. None of them went into Native Americans. And the key thing is that if you're going to talk about Native Americans, how in the hell can you go ahead and bring in millions of illegal Colombians who have birth and they get on welfare? And you have another thing that's even, my friend, even more dangerous, and that is this issue that's come up by New York State there, where 800,000 illegal immigrants are in New York City, and the legislature had said that, oh, okay, even though they're not citizens, they can vote in local elections.
Mm-hmm.
And that,
yeah, they want to chip away at the value of being citizen in the traditional sense. And it's like diluting the native population, the actual true native population of America right now.
Well, it's the same old Nicaraguan approach that goes back to Che Guevara.
Yeah, if you're voting the wrong way, you have to import new voters, right, that vote the right way.
Well, yeah, and also when you have 800,000 who can vote in local areas who, to a great extent, are not paying taxes, and that's by every survey that anyone has ever looked at, especially if they're sitting in a hotel with 2,200 other, let's say, males, and they're getting their food stamps and their Medicare, what we're seeing is this would be a horrible thing. The only thing that saves Oregon is we don't have as many illegal immigrants here in terms of coming in for Harry and David.
Yep, agreed. All right, fair enough. Final question I'll have for you, and we'll cut you loose until next week, okay? Well, maybe a couple of weeks from now, because I'm going to take Monday off.
Well, but, that's a great place. You need a little vacation.
Yeah, I do, I guess. Do you think, which of the court challenges do you think President Trump is most likely to survive? Are any of these looking like ones that the Trump administration will most likely beat, these injunctions?
Oh, on Dodge or in terms of the lawfare mm-hmm. that's still sitting out there from New York City.
Okay, let's talk Doge then first. Does he
on Doge? Mm-hmm. They will eventually get their way.
They will.
Problem is the far left. I mean, Soros got what, $270 million?
Hey, Politico got $8 million more just in their and essentially go out there and hate on Trump is what they did. You know, got
yeah,
paid for.
So this is Nicaragua. Mm-hmm. This is wrong.
All right, you say eventually then. Eventually,
and the question is will he be able to keep the momentum up? And you see, the governor of New York very quickly has done a brilliant thing. She's been able to hide underneath New York City's government, whereas Gavin Newsom is sitting out there already. They need all this money, and what are they doing? They're saying that our people can just go to hell because we're going to keep our politics because one of us is going to be able to run for president in 2028.
Mm-hmm. So you're just saying, though, that Doge is probably the strongest challenge at this point. Birthright citizenship, a little iffier. Would that be fair?
Yeah, only because different things will happen. And, you know, Bill, what's really great about Doge is that this latest one on the Treasury was one where they cut a deal so they could look at it, which is what's sitting over there with mm-hmm. the Labor Department one. But then because of the personal attacks by the far-left communists, and that's what they are, one of them, of the two that was okayed in this deal, resigned because the pressure is too much. It's no different than going ahead and beating on drums outside of Supreme Court Justice House. This is Nicaragua. Mm. This is not the United States. And the win by Trump, that's just part of the fight. The fight continues.
Okay. Well, make America America again. Maybe that's what we need to do. All right, Doc, we'll talk soon, and you be well. Thank you again. All right?
Oh, take care. Be well, my friend. And it's always a pleasure.
All right. We will catch up on the rest of the news here in just a moment. A little bit of time for open phones also on Monday. And we'll have some emails of the day and a bunch more. This is the Bill Meyer Show. Now then, my number is 770-5633, but Steve Yancey's number, if you got a renewal in from your insurance and it's not looking real good, talk to Steve and get a quote. And what Steve will do is shop you around and try to find the best coverage, maybe the equivalent coverage that you have for less money, or maybe even better coverage for the same amount of money, or maybe if you're talking about home insurance and fire insurance, just trying to get coverage at all if you're in the rural lands. Sky Park Insurance, independent insurance agency, has been saving me lots of money. Lots of other listeners have also had great experiences. Why don't you try them? 261-5444, 261-5444. You can also find out more about him and also Lynn Barton over at Sky Park at skyparkins.com.
At Sky Park, we make insurance easy.
The delicious options seem endless at Freddy's Diner.
To the Bill Meyer Show on 106.3 KMED. Give Bill a call at 541-770-5633. That's 770-KMED.
9 before 9, a fellow calling himself Chief Bighorn is here. You have me scared,
good
Chief.
Good morning.
How you doing?
Good morning, Bill. How are you?
I am fine, Mr. Caveman. What's on your mind?
Hey. Oh, man, I'm just having a great time down here in the great state of Texas. Nice and sunny.
Oh, you're in Texas. Good for you.
Oh, yeah, hibernating down here. You know, cold in the caves are too cold.
What's going on in your world, Chief? What's on your mind?
Oh, we're getting ready for Boatnik. Boatnik 2025, baby. It's going to be a good one.
So you're actually going to be coming back from Texas for Boatnik, are you?
Always, always. Got to have the cage ready to go get those kids and get those kids caged up so they get to the right side of the world. You
okay.
Know what I mean?
Now, make sure, though, that you have your attorney on speed dial today. This is Oregon 2025 we're talking about, okay, Mr. Caveman?
Never stopped us before. We asked for forgiveness.
Instead of permission, right?
That's the way we roll. We invented rock and roll, you know. We got hit by a rock, and then we roll.
And then
That's
we roll.
And roll.
All right. Thanks, Chief Bighorn. Good hearing from you. Okay. I love people with a sense of humor. That's good. All right. You know, back on this, I heard, Bill Lundin, of course, doing the story this morning on our Attorney General, Dan Rayfield, filing that lawsuit to block order that ends funding for medical institutions and gender-affirming care research here. And it's really interesting. You hear just the quick take on the news here, but Attorney General Dan Rayfield filed a multi-state federal lawsuit. This was on Friday, late Friday, to halt President Trump's executive order to end federal funding to medical institutions providing gender-affirming care. President Trump's executive order also directs unconstitutional criminal enforcement against medical professionals and patients involved in such care. The law, this is the ones on the kids for cutting the genitalia off of children, I think is where President Trump was going. The lawsuit seeks to block federal agencies from acting on this order. Now, this is what our attorney general says. Families should work directly with their providers, not politicians, to make decisions about personal health care, says Rayfield. We will not stand by as the president tries to unilaterally impose his harmful political agenda on Oregonians. Now, the funny thing is though, President Trump doesn't say we're going to get involved in the providers. They're just saying the federal government will not pay for it. So we have our Attorney General, Rayfield, who believes in his heart of hearts that the federal government should be required to continue to pay medical centers that tend to make a lot of money on sterilizing kids under the rubric or guise of gender-affirming care. Do you agree on this, that the federal government should be forced to continue to pay for this? I think that's quite interesting. Definitely part of the woke agenda. But, that seems to be all that Dan Rayfield is doing right now, finding ways to join multi-state lawsuits to resist Trump. Because apparently there is a constitutional duty to continue to pay to attack children and to give gender-affirming, which means mental illness-affirming care, to many children in Oregon. I don't know how that's going to work out for him, but we will see. Meanwhile, yesterday at the Super Bowl, it was pretty interesting, did not see a lot of woke. Did you? I didn't see a lot of woke. In fact, about the only thing that was exciting about as far as protests, and Cheryl ended up sending me this because someone was asking, hey, did someone raise the Palestinian flag during the halftime show? No, it wasn't that really, because I didn't see that, watching the television broadcast. But Cheryl said to Bill, the performer didn't pull out a Palestine flag. There was a protester who tried to crash the Super Bowl halftime show, but was tackled by security. I saw the tackle on social media, not on the television at that point. She sent me a couple of screenshots of that. Thank you very much for that. A lot of corporations backing away from the woking, from being awoke, as the case might be. But not true with Costco. Have you heard what Costco's up to? Man, Costco is doubling down now. Costco doled out 100, this is from Fox Business, by the way. Costco doled out hundreds of thousands in bonuses to their CEO and top executives based on diversity, equity, and inclusion in environmental metrics from 2021 to 2024. They paid their CEO, Ron Vacris, a $93,000 bonus last year based on getting the social justice and environmental objectives, which include metrics concerning diversity, equity, and inclusion, resource consumption, and other environmental-related areas. The other executives got $24,000 in bonuses. So think about that when you are paying your Costco membership. If you have a Costco membership, you might consider this. In 2023, the CEO back then got a $100,000 bonus for meeting environmental and DEI metrics, and they're continuing to double down. I guess you need a lot of DEI to deliver 50-pound jars of pickles. I guess you have to have DEI, otherwise that wouldn't function. What do you think about that, huh?
The popularity of Fontana Roofing's metal division.
Me, Dusty, with Dusty's Transmissions, and I'm on KMED.
Shay, before 9 o'clock at KMED and KMED HD1, Eagle Point, Medford, KBXG, Grants Pass. Brother Brad is here. Hello, Brad. What's on your mind today, huh?
Hey, Bill, I had an interest because you keep an eye on things like this, but this whole thing with ICE enforcement, and it's not being supported by Oregon sheriffs. Is that my understanding?
Yes, you're right about that. And it has to do with, and I know that we were talking a little bit about this on Friday, but essentially what the Sheriff's Department has done, and this is the Oregon Sheriff's Association, Oregon State Sheriff's Association, that came out with recommendations that when it comes to sanctuary city conversations, sanctuary city laws, because we have sanctuary state laws, you know, essentially, and the state legislature has passed a lot of this. They have recommended that people go with the sanctuary state laws because those are state laws, okay? And most of, if not all, of the area sheriffs have decided to go along with what the Oregon State Sheriff's Association had to say, okay?
So where does that play with federal mandate? I mean, if the federal government mandates ICE enforcement, they don't have to conform?
Well, there are state laws that they are hewing to that more or less say that it's illegal for them to use their jail or anything like that to help ICE out. There are several laws that have been passed to do this. Now, it's really interesting because the states, the area sheriffs have also been on the line of, hey, we're not going to enforce Measure 114. But I think where we're talking about here this morning is that there's a difference between not enforcing a law or being told you are not allowed to enforce a law, which is what state law is telling sheriffs. And the sheriffs are deciding, okay, you are telling us we are not permitted because of these various state laws to do so. Do you understand where I'm coming from on this one?
Oh, yeah. What bothers me is the safety of the citizenry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's a measured effect. There have been more incidents to these type of individuals, you know, perpetrating really ugly events against citizens.
Now, where I think this may be going at this point is that you already see Pam Bondi, who is suing state of Illinois and also the governor, you know, the governor of Illinois,
right,
because of not cooperating with this, because they also have such sanctuary state laws. And Oregon has similar sanctuary state laws. In fact, quite many of them. We passed a lot of them since 1987 or so. And I'll be curious to see how that works out, because technically federal law says, hey, immigration is something that is only under the purview of the federal government, constitutionally and otherwise, and by statute. And so it's really setting up a real conflict or a real challenge, a real constitutional issue. And it's going to go to court, but I think ultimately it'll be interesting to see what happens when Oregon loses about one-third of its budget because of their stance on sanctuary city. And that's all I can say right now. It's all pure speculation at this point, but they're sticking with the state law over the federal immigration law. That's where they're going at this point, okay? And I understand, you know, to a certain extent. I guess they're more scared of the governor at this point. But we'll talk more tomorrow, okay?
This is Jeff at Quality Tree Service.